And a very good Monday morning to you all. Welcome into Jones and Keefe here on WEEI, Boston Sports Original, just a little after 10 o'clock on Monday, May the 26th. 2025. No Jones, no Keefe here this morning. Dan Ball and John Lyons with you 10 till 1:10, taking you up to coverage of the Boston Red Sox. Aren't we excited to hear them on the radio again? They start a 6-game road trip this week out in Milwaukee, taking on the Brewers. It is a crochet day, so that is certainly a positive. We'll have coverage pregame style starting at 1:10 with Joe Weil. First pitch at 2:10. Mr. Lyons, good morning, sir. How are you?
Dan Ball, I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm excited to be here with you, excited to fill in for Jones and Keefe. This is a big day for us too, Dan Ball, because we've done, what, 5 or 6 shows together?
Yeah, yeah.
But this is the first time you've slid over to the one chair, so.
Very excited to be
here.
Don't
screw it up, I guess would be my advice.
I'll do my best.
That's usually what I tell myself.
I'll do my best.
50-50 at best.
That's true. That's
a lot to get to today too, on a Memorial Day.
Yeah.
We got Celtics, we got Patriots, and of course you mentioned, I mean, a lot of Red Sox stuff to get to today as well.
No question. That's where we're going to start. We'll also mix in, as John mentioned, the Celtics and the current state of the NBA playoffs, how the Knicks and the Pacers compare to where the grieving Celtics fans are right now. Patriots OTAs, what did we take away from Drake May's performances and all that. But we will start with the Boston Red Sox, and we'll start with you at 617-779-7937. You can call and you can text to join the conversation at any point, and I have a strong feeling that Red Sox fans will have a lot to say here on this Monday morning. But before we continue, Tom just went away from the microphone. I was going to say hello to him on this Monday morning. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning, Dan. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, man. It's a pleasure to have you here. We're with you up until 1:10 here on this Monday. Okay, the Red Sox wrap up, John, a 10-game homestand at Fenway Park. And the timing of the homestand for me was significant when you looked at this 2025 schedule, because that Memorial Day weekend line on the schedule in Major League Baseball, right around that 1/3 mark into the season, is usually a pretty good spot to get a feel for where your favorite baseball team is. If you're over 500, you're under 500, you're kind of past the point of pretending. And you and I were digging into some of the stats before we went on this morning. That 50-game mark for the Boston Red Sox, there was a lot of potential, a lot of promise for this year and compared to past rosters that we've seen in, say, the post-2021 era of the Red Sox. Once again, we find ourselves at the 50-game mark, right around the 1/3 spot in the season, and this team is still frustratingly mediocre, and their love affair with 500 continues.
Yeah, and they're sitting here through 55 games at 27-28,
right?
Like one game under, and as you and I were talking, this is not really that new for the Red Sox. You go back a few years, I mean, last year they were 26-24 through 50 games. Same thing in 2023. In 2022, they were 23-27. And this team has a disturbing pattern, really, since they went to that ALCS in 2021, where they start the season mediocre, they end the season fading, but in the middle, they're one of the best teams in baseball, like June, July, early August. I mean, we talked about it last year, 10 games over 500 at the All-Star break, year before, playoff team at the deadline. So they have this, again, disturbing pattern of, they just don't start out well, and they don't end well. And you mentioned the homestand. They go 5-5 on this homestand. And this homestand, to me, was a huge missed opportunity because they went out on that road trip. They went to Kansas City. They went to Detroit. Detroit, one of the best teams in baseball. They go out there. They get blasted by Detroit. They get swept. They come home. They lose that first game to Atlanta. They're down 6-2 in that second game. They come back and win, and you're thinking, okay, maybe they can get some momentum now. And then they lose the next day 10-4, and it didn't even feel that. I mean, remember Brian Bello, how erratic he was on that Sunday start.
Yeah.
And then the Mets, again, one of the better teams in baseball, you manage to take 2 out of 3 from them, and then the wheels kind of fall off a bit against Baltimore, where you have that great first game, 19-5, but then you split with an Orioles team that's one of the worst teams in baseball, and by far, to me, the most disappointing team this year. You struggle to score runs against a team that's one of the worst pitching teams in baseball. So it just goes to this pattern, again, year after year, where they're so mediocre in the first 50 to 60 games of a season. And it's frustrating that now, in a year that they went out and traded for Crochet, I know Bregman's hurt now, but up until a week ago, Bregman was in your lineup, you spent a lot of money, and you're still in that pattern. And it's just, it's not, I don't even know if I have a great answer for how to get out of it. Like, we'll talk about some ways to get out of it, but there aren't a lot of great answers.
There aren't great answers for how to get out of it, because there isn't one answer that you can point to for me for why it's even happening. It seems as though every time the Red Sox walk through the threshold at Fenway Park or wherever they're playing, we're not entirely sure what Red Sox team we're going to see on that given day. You talked about it. The last series against the Baltimore Orioles is the perfect microcosm for why this team continues to sit around 500. 19 runs scored in that game at the end of last week. You win the first two games of the series, and it starts to feel, hey, maybe the pendulum is swinging a little bit. Maybe you can make something out of this 10-game homestand and end up on the right side of 500 and beat a team that you're statistically supposed to beat. And then your offense goes cold again, and then the defense rears its ugly head again. Dave O'Brien, by the way, on the TV broadcast yesterday, was talking about the Red Sox like they owed him money. I don't know what it was about
you,
yesterday.
You know, what's funny about Dave is, like, you know, and I don't know Dave personally, but, like, over time, you can tell when he just gets annoyed with the Red Sox.
Oh,
like,
my God.
There was a series a couple years ago when they were in San Diego and they were making errors left and right.
Yeah.
And I remember just thinking, like, man, this dude is so sick of these guys.
He wants,
like,
to go. He wanted to go home yesterday.
Yeah.
And lose, trying to be the happy-go-lucky, even though they're playing one of the worst and most pathetic games that you've seen all season. But all of a sudden, as soon as you get one positive, you get one negative. And it's one step forward and one step backward.
And I think the issue has been those timely key situational plays, right? Because if you look at some of the raw numbers, like, they're eighth in the MLB in average, they're ninth in on-base percentage, they're fifth in runs. Like, so if you look at those raw overall numbers, but then you look at it, well, they're fifth in runs for the season, but they're ninth in runs for the month of May. So they've kind of tailed off a little bit. We talked earlier where, like, in innings one through six, they're 16th in the majors in average. And then seven or later, they're third. But they, like, get themselves in these holes, and they start to chip away, and maybe they come back, like that Atlanta game where they come back and win in extra innings. But then there's also that Baltimore game the other night where you get a home run in the ninth, and you cut it to 2-1, but then you lose the game.
Right.
Right. So it's like they're getting themselves in holes. They're not getting timely outs when they need it. They're not getting timely hits when they need it. Like, it's just, that to me has been the maddening part, is these little situations it feels like they keep failing at.
So that begs the question, where is this coming from? And we just got a text from the 401 that I think is an interesting addition. Culture starts at the top. So if you're pointing to what continues to go wrong, a lot of people will point to the one common thread, which is Alex Cora and the coaching staff. I liked what Lou Maloney presented on one of his dog walk videos on Twitter. I think it was last week, where he talked about the relative youth and inexperience in different parts of this roster. It all kind of comes together into this mess. So if you were to point to one thing that bothers you the most with where this team sits right now through 55 games, is there one thing that jumps out?
To me, it's defensively.
Okay.
And the reason I point to that is it's not new. Like, they've been the worst defensive team in the majors for, what, 3 years now? I mean, they most errors in the league the last couple of years, bottom of the league in fielding percentage. You bring in Bregman. I think Bregman's been good in the field. Narvaez has been great in the field.
Unbelievable.
Rafael has been great in the field. I mean, Rafael is, what, fifth in outs above average or whatever it is? And again,
nice to know he can do something positive still.
And I mentioned those situational pieces. Like, the Red Sox are sixth in the MLB in defensive runs saved. That raw number looks awesome. But then it's like, well, Rafael is a huge part of that. Narvaez is a huge part. Like, some of these other guys are huge parts of it. And then you have, like, Story has, to me, not been good defensively. First base was a problem defensively before Casas got hurt. Second base, Campbell has showed some potential there, but he's gone cold. And also, you've just been inconsistent at second base. Like, sometimes Campbell's there, sometimes he's not. So it's just, to me, it's those little defensive mistakes. Because, again, I feel like defensively, that's something that you can be better at without having to spend a ton of money. Like, I know Bregman was a high money guy, but that's one of those things that you should be able to be better than without spending a ton of money.
And I think your main issue with this team kind of ties indirectly into mine, and it's the personnel in the infield. And I think that goes to two parts, because Story individually has regressed as a defender. I don't think you or I or anybody else had huge expectations for him in terms of what he was going to do with the plate. If you could get somewhere close to 250, I feel like at this point that would have been a win.
I mean, the last time he hit consistently was, what, when he was on Colorado?
Right.
I mean, seriously, like, I'm not even trying to be a jerk. Like, I think that's the last time he's really consistently, A, played,
yeah,
and B, hit.
Well, because he played, I think the number was 163 games on his contract with the Red Sox going into this year. So that's one full season worth of injuries and inconsistencies. So The problem there is that, as you pointed out, metrically speaking, and just with the eye test, the defense, the range, the arm strength has all taken a step back. So Story right now has been a massive negative no matter where you put him. Bregman was really the only main positive that you had, but there are warts in his game. And then on the right side of the infield, after a hot start to the career of Christian Campbell, the league figured him out, and the Red Sox have started to do the same thing that they did with Seydon Rafaela and they've done with other young players, which is jerk them around. All right, so you're playing second base. Now, tomorrow you're going to go play center field. Before any of this happens, you're going to go take ground balls at first base. And we're just going to move you around to make sure you're just uncomfortable enough to not be able to hit your weight when you're actually in the lineup. And then maybe the biggest issue out of all of that for me is what Tristan Casas did not bring in the field and also did not bring in the middle of your order.
That's another piece of this, right? Like, the injury was devastating and hoping for a great recovery, but don't gloss over that before he got injured, he wasn't playing well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, especially offensively. Like, and Rafaela, to me, like I mentioned, he's been a terrific defender this year, but he's been wildly inconsistent at the plate. Like, he'll have a good stretch, and then in his last seven games, he has one hit.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he'll have a good stretch and then a bad stretch. And, like, that to me has been the maddening part, too.
Your infield was also supposed to represent your three, your four, your five, and maybe your seven hitter in your lineup. Other than Willier Abreu, your infield was supposed to be the heart of the order. And once you get past, now in this case without Bregman, Jaron Duran and Rafael Devers, other than Carlos Narvaez, it's kind of been a black hole in your lineup. So for me, the infield has been the one thing that I struggle with the most. And no matter what, you're just not sure which Red Sox team you're going to get game over game. I also think the starting pitching in recent weeks has gotten the ire of fans. It's not a full season issue to me. You've had Hunter Dobbins struggling to get through starts. Brian Baio is now a legitimate concern because we're over a month where he hasn't been able to get into or out of the fifth inning. But I still don't worry as much about the starting rotation. The bullpen has been overtaxed. It comes down to offense and defense. The guys on that side of the field are the one thing that I can point to throughout this entire year where that's where my inconsistency comes from most.
Yeah, and I mean, they have games too where it feels like once the wheels start to come off, they can't recover. Like,
right.
I go back to that Atlanta Sunday game against the Braves a couple weeks ago where it's a close game. Remember, Devers had that grand slam. You have a 4-3 lead, and all you want is a good couple innings out of Brian Baio after that, and he gives up a few runs. Next thing you know, you're down 7-4. Boom, wheels fall off. You end up being down 10-4 and lose. So it feels like, too, once they get down, most of the time they don't really recover. And I know they've had some instances. Of course, the night before the game I just mentioned, they had the walk-off from Devers. Like, they've had some instances of that, but it feels like they get down two or three runs and they struggle to really overcome that. And some of that's obvious, right? Like, you don't want to get in holes, but it just feels like, I don't know if it's a mentality thing, I don't know if it's a frustration thing, but it feels like once they get in a deficit, it's just really hard for them to get out of it.
And sometimes you see the momentum kind of cross paths if you're looking at it on a chart, where as your offense maybe does start to claw back, because you've referenced those numbers in the last three innings of games. They do hit the ball better in those kind of the high leverage situations, but then you'll have a blow up in the bullpen at one point or another, or you'll have a blown save. You'll have a Weissert in Detroit kind of outing where even if your offense is doing its job,
maybe Vlad Guerrero homer in Toronto.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Killer.
And there have been an uncomfortable amount of those one-off moments for a reliever where they just haven't been able to get the job done. So my question for you at 617-779-7937 is, what bothers you most about this Red Sox team? Because we're not just talking about an individual season in 2025. We're talking now about essentially a 3.5-year trend of mediocrity and frustration and errors and the things that plague this current team. So if there was anything that you could distill it down to, what bothers you the most with this team, you can call, you can text, and join the conversation. One positive that came from this weekend was the emergence of Marcelo Meyer. And it begged the question, John, where does this team go from here? If we're not looking at an AL East contender or a wild card contender or whatever it's going to be at the end of the season, is there still some hope on the horizon? And I think that's what we can discuss in just a few moments after Tom Cristofiuli tells us what's trending. Dan Ball, John Lyons, and for the guys here on this Memorial Day Monday, 617-779-7937 is the phone number to jump in on the conversation on the Boston Red Sox. And Matt in Rhode Island will lead us off this morning. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Oh, was that Stiz Grimy rejoin? That was bumping. Good job, man.
There you go.
I'm just trying to wonder. I'm just wondering what Alex Cora is thinking. Oh, we had a 10-game winning streak. What team are you watching? The team that strikes out 16 times, or the team that has 10 hits yesterday and scores one run? I called you yesterday, Ball, and you got to bring Roman Anthony up, and he might be the best player you have on any in the organization. We're going to find that out, right? But in the meantime, bring this kid up and then start moving the pieces around of the puzzle to try to get through this, because Bregman's out, and like, you don't got too much to work with here. Thanks.
Thank you, Matt, for the call. Always appreciate it. So he is referencing a quote from Alex Cora from yesterday, and this is quoting Christopher Smith on Twitter. You guys know how I feel about 10-game win streaks. We haven't done that in a while here. That's one. But when you get on a hot streak, you want to get 8 games over 500, 10 games over 500. So we're still playing where we're at, an average team, and hopefully when we get our streak, we can get to 8 games over 500 and then take off. So I think that's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek number to throw around. I saw that at the All-Star break last year.
They got to 10 games over 500, and they couldn't consistently stay there. And they have Crochet now, which is an ace they didn't have last year.
Right.
But it still feels like they're a guy in the rotation short. And, like, to the caller's point, like, how do you get 10 hits and one run? I mean, I think what we've been seeing, and yesterday was a good example of it, like, first inning, Duran leadoff single to start the game, and then you get, what, 3 straight outs after that? And then second inning, right? Meyer singles to left, 3 straight outs after that, right? Third inning, you get an infield single to start the game, 3 of the next 4 guys out. Like, so it's like you're getting a leadoff single or a guy gets on early and then 3 straight outs. So it's like that's the issue, is you're not getting a lot of timely hitting. Like, guys get on base and you're not moving them over or you're not driving them in, and that's how you get 10 hits in one run against one of the worst pitching staffs in the majors.
Let's get to the other point that Matt brought up, and it triggers our next conversation for where this team is going. First of all, I just to set the context for this conversation, are you out on the 2025 Red Sox? Are you still holding on to hope with this group? What's your high watermark for what they can do at this point?
So before the season with Crochet and Bregman, I sat in the seat and I said, I think their ceiling is they can get to the ALCS, right? Like,
I think
especially,
that's fair. By the way, I think that's fair for you to say, because a lot of people ended up saying that.
And my viewpoint was, you add Crochet, a legit ace. I know he only threw 146 innings last year, but a legit ace. You add Bregman, a champion. Also, Walker Buehler, a guy that's won multiple World Series, to your pitching staff. I was like, all right, you put all those together. You add Chapman, who maybe Chapman isn't what he was 4, 5, 6 years ago, but he's still a good reliever. So you add all these guys to a team that went 81-81 last year. You should be able to get to the playoffs, and I would think win that division series. And then we'll see. I still felt they were a pitcher short to go beyond that.
Okay.
But I think right now I'm sitting here saying, yeah, they should be a playoff team, but that's kind of where I feel like their ceiling is. And honestly, it's a good discussion to have, Dan, but I feel like it's almost a false choice. Like, we shouldn't be sitting here thinking about, should they be a playoff team? Like, they should be a playoff team. They have it. Like, Trevor Story, I know he's come back from injuries. He has not played well or even close to his standards. Tanner Houck was a guy we thought coming into the season could be a legit number 2 starter.
Sure.
At worst, a 3.
All-star last year. I know he fell off second half of the season, but all-star is an all-star.
And we figured, hey, he's had a full season now. He's coming in behind Crochet. His ERA has been hovering around 8 through large parts of his
season.
And
now he's quote-unquote hurt.
Exactly. And Bayo, we're like, all right, can Bayo be a good 4 or maybe a good 3, you know, depending on where Buehler is? He's been all over that. I mean, he can't get out of the 5th inning.
Right.
But like, and so, and now their offense, it feels like Devers has been fantastic at the plate. He's had multiple off-field distractions, or technically on-field, if you will. But like, Devers has been fantastic at the plate. And then beyond that, it's like, remember Abreu started the season hitting 400 those first few weeks? Now he's hitting 250?
Right.
Like, he's tailed, and I don't expect it at 400. But it's just, what I'm saying is, we should not be sitting here, we should be sitting here saying, this is a playoff team, what's their ceiling in the playoffs? We shouldn't be sitting here talking about a team that's barely hovering around 500.
We should be talking about a team that may still be a starter short, or in another spot where I think they could add another high leverage arm. I know Andy Hart throws Mason Miller out there every chance he gets.
We'd all love Mason Miller. That'd be fun.
We do. That'd be great. At one point, he tried to convince himself that they could trade Trevor Story for him.
Can I get Dylan Cease too? Like,
I don't hate
from
that.
The Padres, you know,
I don't
just throw him up there.
I don't mind that at all. That's another one that can be added to the
list. But I think, like, to your question, though, right? Because it does aggravate me that we're even having this discussion and that this team should be better than that now.
Yeah.
But I think you have to look at this team and say, all right, you bring up Marcelo Meyer. If you bring up Roman Anthony, is that them telling us we don't think we're a playoff team? Or is that them telling us, hey, we should be a playoff team, but we need a shot in the arm? Because even Marcelo Meyer, if Bregman doesn't get hurt, he's not here.
Right. And that aggravates me, John, to no end. Because that's not calling up Marcelo Meyer because you're ready to add a complimentary piece to a team that you think is going to make a run for the playoffs, make a run to the ALCS, whatever. You are telling me that you're a top three prospect in your system. This guy that we've heard more, we've heard the name Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony more than, what, half the guys on the roster?
I mean, I remember the day Marcelo Meyer got drafted, the buzz was, we can't believe he fell to fourth overall. This
exactly.
is the best player in the draft. So literally from draft day.
Right.
He's all we've heard about, and he's been great in the minors. And Roman Anthony, ESPN came out with their rankings this week. He's now the number one prospect in all of baseball. Like, so these are the guys that you would hope you would bring up to augment a playoff run.
And instead, now you're bringing up, at least in Meyer's case, and Anthony is still sitting down in AAA patiently waiting to get his call. Meyer is called up out of necessity, not because you wanted to, not because you necessarily thought he was ready. You're calling him up because Alex Bregman is now hurt. So instead of adding him to a mix where you have a healthy Bregman and maybe in this situation a healthy Casas, and you're adding him as a complement, you're now adding him as an emergency piece and asking him, hey, fill in for our $40 million third baseman for a couple of months, as it seems like it may be. It's another handling of a prospect that I don't love. I really wish that you would call them up in a spot where, hey, you can join into whatever we're trying to create in 2025 versus, hey, all of the expectations are now on you to try to fill in for this guy.
And it also begs the question, and you talked about this earlier, like Christian Campbell, it feels like the league has figured him out at the plate right now, right?
Yeah.
He only had one really good minor league season last year, yet he was the guy that came up first over Meyer and over Anthony. And look, in spring training, remember, he wasn't that great in spring training.
Right.
And then he had those tough first few games, and then he kind of turned it on, and he was good in April. I'm not taking that away from him. But you kind of wonder, did they even kind of botch it? Like, should Campbell be the one who got extra time in AAA, and should Meyer have been your opening day second baseman? Like, that feels, in hindsight, like a pretty big mistake. Now that Campbell has struggled so much, they might even be moving him to first base. We'll see. But now that he's struggled so much, and there's days now that they haven't even put him in the lineup.
Yeah.
And instead, you had this guy in Meyer who's been, you know, your top one or two prospect for years. He's been a top 10 prospect in baseball. Yet you chose this other guy, and we can say whether it was because he's the driveline golden boy or what, but like you chose this other guy over him, and for a few weeks it looked great. And then now it hasn't. And I think that, to me, is another thing you can look at and say, have they been consistently putting their best lineup on the field? Because it doesn't feel like they've been consistently putting their best lineup out there. Because, I mean, we had a texter, I think, from the 401 say, it's like after the fourth guy in the lineup, it's a black hole.
Right.
And that's something like, so should Roman Anthony be part of that lineup? Should Meyer have been part of it sooner than that? Like, that to me is like, are they consistently putting their best lineup on the field? Doesn't really feel that way.
No, it certainly does not. And I saw another text that was kind of in that similar vein, where you have a glut of players who are continually getting at bats or getting innings based on merit, based on veteran status. I know this is basically saying Trevor Story's name without saying it, but there are other guys that apply, and I think David Hamilton is another guy who fits into that, where you continue to get playing time and continue to get reps and get consistency at whatever position you're at in the field or in the lineup, despite not really deserving it, while your prospects are moving around and you're shoehorning these guys in just to try to seemingly placate the veterans on your roster. So the overall thing that bothers me with just the entire equation, we've spent the first half an hour complaining about the many different aspects of the Red Sox, John. I don't feel as though this team values putting the best 26 players in the organization on their roster at any given day. And conversely, I also don't think they value putting the best 9 players in their batting lineup in the right order every single game. I look at too many times where there's a guy that's playing either above what he's capable of in the field, above where he's capable of at the plate, and you're just not talented enough to be making exceptions for guys at this point. You need to actually consider yourself to be a championship level team, or you're not actually going to play like that if you don't treat yourself like that before every game starts when you're putting your lineup together.
And I think if you're the Red Sox, what's really been aggravating is the AL as a whole hasn't been that great record-wise. Like,
garbage.
The Tigers are terrific, right?
Yeah.
But you're sitting at 27-28, and you're only 2.5 games back in the wild card. Like, you should be a playoff team with not only your payroll, but all these young players we've been hearing about for years. I mean, let's not forget Willy Abreu. You won a gold glove last year, right?
Right.
We've heard about all these guys, and yet they're just maddeningly inconsistent. Like, it's really a big problem. And we had the caller earlier say, how do you get 10 hits in one run? And we talked about the timely hitting and how they haven't got that. And then you look at just the inconsistency. Like, yesterday they have 10 hits, but Duran has 4, Narvaez has 2, Meyer has 2. So you have all these guys with multi-hit games, but then you have Devers, who I know has been good, but 0 hits.
Yep.
Abreu, 0 hits. Campbell, 0-for-4, 0 hits. Hamilton, 0 hits. Rafaela, 0. So you have these stretches of guys who are giving you nothing at the plate. So it's like, okay, Duran goes 4-for-5 yesterday, and that's awesome, right? And then you have other, you know, Narvaez gives you 2 hits. That's great. But then when you have 3 guys around them with 0 hits, that's why you're not scoring any runs and why you're losing to an Orioles team that's been the most disappointing team in the major leagues. You should not be splitting a series, Dan, with the Orioles at this point. They have 18 wins, and 2 of them are against you this weekend.
Right.
Like, you should not be splitting that. You want to tell me 3 out of 4 and you drop 1? Okay. Like,
sure.
All right. But you should not be, especially when you win the first game 19-5, you win the second game. You shouldn't be splitting that series. And these are the things that we'll look back on. If they miss the playoffs, we'll look back on and say, hey, remember early in the year where, you know, they split that series against the Orioles in May when if they had won 3, you know, we'll look back on all those things and say these were problems all along.
617-779-7937 is the phone number if you'd like to join the conversation. The text line is voicing their displeasure with where this Boston Red Sox team is. We'll get to your calls as well on where this team stands. So the question off of all of that, with all of the frustration that comes from this group, is how drastic of a change are we talking? Is it first, I'll preface that by saying,
if they don't make the playoffs, I don't think Alex Cora is back.
So
before, and it's not all his fault, but yeah, it's like we've talked to, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but we've talked about year after year after year, they start slow and they fade at the end of the year.
Right.
And it's been different rosters. It's been different groups of guys, and it's still happening. And it's like different rosters. You're still one of the worst fielding teams. You've been an inconsistent base running team for 3 or 4 years. And I know last year Hamilton and Duran had over 30 steals, but you've been an inconsistent base running team for 3 years now. Like, some good, some bad. So it keeps happening. Like, to me, and it's not all him. I know Heim Bloom gave him some bad major league rosters. They had guys that couldn't play shortstop for months at a time. Like, I remember Kike Hernandez at shortstop. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
But it's just, this keeps happening year after year after year. It's like, at what point, and I usually hate to call for someone's job, but at what point does the manager have to answer? We're on our, what, 3rd GM since 2019? You know, a third or fourth different iteration of the roster, and it keeps happening.
All right, let's get to the Alex Cora conversation, and we'll start it with Bob in Warwick. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why? Because the Red Sox stink.
Okay.
I hate them.
Okay. Care to expand how that makes you feel great?
I think Alex Cora is incompetent. His brother, Joey Cora, was 10 times the ball player he was. The Red Sox be better off getting rid of Alex Cora and bringing Joey Cora, who's 10 times the ball player that Alex Cora ever thought of being.
All right, Bob, thank you for the call. That is not necessarily where I thought
also
he was
too,
going.
We had a 401 texter point something out, too.
Yeah.
And I think it's good. Like, they've lost the 3 games to the White Sox this year. Like, the White Sox have 17 wins, and 3 of them are against you. Baltimore has 18 wins. 3 of them are against you. Remember the Twins had that 13-game winning streak or whatever it was?
Yeah, yeah.
They started that against you. And coming into that series, they were not a good team. They were playing bad baseball there. I think they were hovering right around .500. They got hot against you, and then they won 12 or 13 in a row. So it's like you've been losing to either bad teams or teams that at the time were not playing well. And I think that, to me, is another piece of this. And we talk about this across all sports. Like, can you beat the teams you're supposed to beat? Like, Toronto is in fourth place. They have 25 wins, but they've played well against you this year. So it's right. just, to me, that's another piece of this where not only are you making mistakes in the field, are you getting inconsistent pitching, are you getting wildly inconsistent production from your lineup, they're also losing to teams that you shouldn't be losing to.
Yeah, you're playing down your conversation. And conversely, then you turn around and take a series from the Mets earlier this week. And you and I were having a conversation off air about the stretch last year that kind of opened the eyes of Red Sox fans, winning back-to-back series against Philadelphia, who was a wagon, and then winning a series against the Yankees, who at the time was also a wagon.
That was, what, mid-June-ish, right?
Yeah, mid-June. And then you went on a nice run. You were 10 games over. That led you into being 10 games over 500 at the All-Star break. And then you went out on that West Coast trip and got swept by the Dodgers. The Rockies scored 20 runs off of you, and then it kind of fell apart from there. So that, to me, speaks to not being prepared when the first pitch is thrown. That is a lack of respect and preparation for whatever opponent that you're playing. Oh, we'll roll over the Baltimore Orioles. They suck. Look at their record. Look at their runs. They're awful. We don't need to be ready to give 110% again. Let's save our energy for the Mets. Let's save our energy for the Brewers road trip. So that does speak to coaching to me. And as much as I will try to go to bat for Alex Cora, I think he is one of the best and most respected at what he does. There is a certain thing, John, as the message starts to not quite get through from one ear to the other.
And
with
you
some
wonder,
of your guys.
Like, you talk about a larger discussion, like the organizational culture. Because since winning the World Series in 2018, they've had one good season, and right. it was 2021. And we talk about these young guys, like whether it's Meyer, Campbell, eventually Anthony, you can throw Rafael and Abreu, Duran. They were brought up in an organization where you have one good season in 5 years. Like, is mediocrity okay? Like, and I know a couple of these guys were in the system when they won that World Series, but they were, you know, recent draftees or whatnot. But a lot of these guys that have come up in the last couple of years came in right around or after that championship where you've had one good season in 5 years, 6 years, whatever it is. So mediocrity has kind of been the MO of the Red Sox since 2019.
And you've gone through three different iterations of the front office, the Dave Dombrowski win at all costs culture, which was in there in 2018, into Chaim Bloom, into Craig Breslow, both of which are more analytics driven. And if you're a hitter, it's launch angle and it's exit velocity. And if you're a pitcher, it's spin rate. It's how many sliders are you throwing? Did I throw enough fastballs today? There has been an organizational shift into we need to monitor the analytics and we need to emphasize individual successes and individual data from whatever you can produce. And maybe that's taken a little bit too much of a hold on these individual players versus am I doing what it takes to win at all levels of this organization before I get to the
major
leagues?
And look, I'm not saying you're wrong, but like, a team like the Dodgers or the Padres or teams like they focus on a lot of those analytics, but they also demand a high level of winning. And they have prospects that come up that are good, that are brought up in a culture that, hey, we want to go after it. We want to try to win World Series. And I know the Dodgers have, you know, done that a couple times now, but I think that is a big deal. And you look at the Red Sox in just in the last 20 years, like the 07 Red Sox with Pedroia, Ellsbury, Youkilis. Those guys were brought up in the system where in 03 you go to the ALCS, 04 you win the World Series, 05 you're in the playoffs, a culture of excellence. So when those guys are ready to go and be, you know, decent-sized parts of your operation by 07, they were used to being around, hey, this is an organization that expects a high level of play, that expects winning. And you even go to 2018, right? Like 2018, you have Betts, Bogarts, Devers. Bogarts was on that team in 2013 that won the World Series. Like, Betts was around the organization. And I know you had some last place finishes in between. I'm not pushing that aside. But they had seen, like, hey, this is what it can be. Whereas I feel like a lot of these young guys, like, even Narvaez, who's playing well, he hasn't been part of that here. Like, he hasn't seen that here. A lot of these guys, I mean, Tanner Houck, has he been really part of a culture of winning here? Has Brian Bayo really been part of a culture of winning here? And I know that's a nice buzzword, culture of winning, but I think we've seen it historically with the Red Sox, and we see it now with other organizations. When young players are brought up and the organization is bent on winning, then that helps them in their transition to a good ball club. And you look at the teams, Dan, that aren't good, like the Pirates, have top five picks every year. They have Paul Skeens. They have all that stuff. Yeah. They're still bad.
Right.
Like, because it's not an organizational culture of winning. And it feels like the Red Sox have had an organizational culture of will kind of hover around a playoff spot, maybe make it, maybe not one good season in 6 years. And maybe some of that is bled over into how some of these young players have kind of seen the game as they've come up. And I'm not excusing the vets either. I'm just saying I wonder if that's part of it.
All right, therapy is in session for Red Sox fans. Join the conversation at 617-779-7937. A couple lines you can jump on here during our commercial break. The first thing in the call screener says, Red Sox suck. So if that doesn't set the tone for where we're going next, I don't know what will. We'll catch up on your calls and texts and continue the conversation because I think it's an interesting one, the 30,000-foot view on the Red Sox culture and where those issues stem from. Does it go all the way to the top? We'll explore that next. Back here on WEEI, Dan Ball, John Lyons, in for Jones and Keefe here on this Monday. The guys will be back tomorrow. It's a Tier Tuesday. It's a Tommy Tuesday on Jones and Keefe on Tuesday. But it's Dan and John and our guy, Tom Crisafulli, who is still basking in the glow of being complimented for his Stiz Grimy esque rejoins. He had another one right there. 617-779-7937. Orlando is in Boston on the Red Sox. What's up, Orlando?
Well, I know y'all are blaming Alex Cora and stuff. Yeah, I guess you could get some of the blame. I mean, when I watched Tanner Houck pitch for like three games, you know, last year, I knew he wasn't a starter. I'm like, why they got this dude starting baseball games? So I guess you can blame Alex Cora for that. But let's go back to who signed Trevor Damn Story, man. The dude, I've been hearing this Trevor Story is a good replacement for, he freaking sucks. He sucks. And he's out there all the time, right? Playing ball, hey, we put him out there. And then you go with these young players that the Red Sox say are studs, they're going to be studs, whatever, this and this and that. I don't see it. I mean, I know you got to give a player time. I don't see it. And then it gets kind of, when you want to blame Alex Cora, then the media will get on him for going to his daughter's graduation. And it's like, I hate to go this way, but sometimes they say minorities don't do enough to support their kids. But when we do that, it's a problem too. So it's kind of hard, even though I do think Alex Cora it should get the blame. For especially, I'm going to leave it one like this, I'm going to let it go.
Yep.
Especially what he did, I think it was yesterday. That kid Guerrero came in the game. You saw that he was struggling. He couldn't throw strikes. And then you're going to put him in the next inning so he could do the same and end up giving up a run that kind of cost the Red Sox because Toro hitting a home run. But I'll shut it down and listen to what you have to say, bro.
All right, Orlando, thank you for the call. Wide-ranging.
First of all, I have zero problem with Cora going to his daughter's graduation.
Right there
I thought
you.
That was the stupidest thing to criticize. Like, one day in the season, and I wouldn't care if the Red Sox were the best team in baseball or the worst. One day to go to that, I have zero problem with that at
right.
all. And he shouldn't have even been criticized.
And it was her wish. Her wish on her graduation day was for, because it is a split family. She wanted the family together on her graduation day. Great.
Another thing is, like, and I know, hey, they make a lot of money and it's fun and all that, but like, kids of baseball players and managers do have to sacrifice a lot of time with their dad. So she wanted them there for one day. Like, I have absolutely zero problem with that. To his point on Houck, how about this? Houck has thrown 43 and two-thirds innings.
Okay.
39 earned runs.
Whew.
Just abysmal. Like, and
almost hard to do.
We sat here last year in May and we're like, man, this dude is one of the best pitchers in baseball. I mean, I think in May last year, his ERA was like 2.1 or something crazy. Like, he was awesome. And since then, like, the wheels have fallen off. And this year, he's been awful. Like, and the caller did bring up one other interesting point. This organization has made, I think, a couple major choices in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And it feels like they've chosen wrong on both. They chose Devers over Mookie Betts. And they chose Story over Bogarts. And it feels like both of those have been dead wrong. And I know Bogarts' contract with the Padres is not going to age well. That's a false choice. You could have signed Bogarts for a contract similar to Story if you went to him a year in advance and really negotiated with him and didn't try to lowball him.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about this organization, because this goes back to John Lester. This goes back to plenty of homegrown talents.
And yet then Sale, they gave a lot of money to, like, and that was Dombrowski.
Right.
And they gave a lot of money to Eovaldi, and then it's like, once outside of Dombrowski, they haven't done that until they did it with Crochet, and I guess you can say Bregman, but I'm talking an extension, really until the Crochet. So, which is what, six, seven years
right,
later?
Right. But more to my point is other than Rafael Devers, who is the homegrown talent that's gotten the the long-term extension to stay in Boston, be a face of the franchise, be a guy that people can keep their jerseys. I think that's a small but important part of why you get Red Sox fans being so frustrated is Bogarts is gone, Betts is gone, Benintendi's gone, Bradley's gone. These guys
and it's
that
the
have
choices.
Come up,
like, yeah. It's, if you told me you had to choose between Betts and Devers and you chose Betts, like, all right, that would have been a good choice.
Right.
And that's one of those two. I know it's easy to say, oh, hindsight. We can kind of all see that at the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
well, Mookie also wanted to be a free agent. I think he would have gone to the market regardless of if you traded him or not.
I think you could have re-signed him if you really wanted to. I know they offered him 10 and 300. I get it.
You think, like, before he got to free agency, you could have re-signed him?
I think if you offered him what he got from the Dodgers or similar, yeah.
Okay.
Because he did re-sign with the Dodgers before he went to free agency. Like, so I think you could, and even if he went to the market, you're telling me that the Boston Red Sox couldn't have matched someone's offer. So, but the point
that
is,
part I agree with.
And the point is, like, they made these choices. You know, Devers over Betts. That hasn't been, and Devers has been great at the plate. But again, he's been one of the worst fielders in the MLB the last 7 years. He's had multiple media off-field things already this year. And then Bogarts, you chose Story over him. And Bogarts, his first year was in San Diego, he was 280 or whatever it was. And I know his numbers haven't been as good the past couple of years. He's still been available all the time.
Right.
Whereas Story, you said it, 163 games total coming into this year. So they've made some bad choices as well.
So you have a roster that's your veterans are not really overly beloved by your fan base because they're oftentimes replacing homegrown stars, guys that people loved. And then you supplement that with young talent that hasn't really caught on to this point. I mean, Duran, now in his kind of his second stint as a major leaguer, he's figured it out, and in credit to him. Abreu, there's a lot there, but there's still inconsistencies. Campbell, you haven't seen it consistently yet. Meyer just got here. Anthony isn't even here yet. Going through the list,
Casas
hasn't lived up to expectations. Yeah. Dahlbeck didn't live up to expectations. So, how do all these pieces come together as a good ball club?
Yeah, and I think that goes to the point where, like, development's not always linear, right? So there's going to be inconsistencies, and that's where you need guys like Devers to be really good. And he has been at the plate, but again, multiple distractions outside of that. You need a guy like Tanner Houck to be good all year while Abreu tries to develop. And I know Houck's a young player too. Or you need Casas pre-injury to be just consistently available and good, and he wasn't. And, like, that gives you the space for some of these young, even Duran this year. Like, he's hitting 279 now, but prior to this homestand was really bad at the plate. I mean, what was he in, 255 or 259 coming into the homestand?
Yeah, batting average went up 20 points during the homestand.
So that's the issue. Like, your veteran guys have not given your young players enough space to breathe to develop. And now you're sitting in a situation where you're a team that should be, I don't know, 6-7 games above 500, and you're sitting below 500 as here on Memorial Day.
All right, let's table the Red Sox conversation for just a moment. We do have Red Sox baseball after all of this this negative talk for the first hour. They take on the Milwaukee Brewers. It is a crochet day. Pregame coverage at 1:10. First pitch at 2:10. We're going to try to catch up with our guy Joe Weil, who was on the pregame show today, leading into coverage of Red Sox baseball. Let's move on to maybe the source of the most optimism currently among Boston sports teams. That is Drake May and the New England Patriots coming off of OTAs. Some questions coming from Tuesday, some answers potentially coming from Thursday, and where Patriots fans sit on their quarterback of the future. We'll get to that next.